Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to tonight's show of Strange Magic After Midnight with myself, Victoria Frost, and my co-host, Incoherent Dust, better known as Mika. This show is brought to you by the late night poets at allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a member of the website or the group to call in and read a poem of your own. However, if you like poetry, we do recommend it. We host shows every night of the week on a variety of topics and themes to ensure there's something for everyone to enjoy. And if you already know and love the shows and want to support us, be sure to check out our anthologies on Amazon. You get an awesome selection of poetry as well as help keeping our shows running. Tonight, we are venturing into the void of space. I posted a very quick contest, only 10 poems. We didn't even get 10 poems. So we're also going to be looking at a few from last week and a few other shows that have graciously allowed us to borrow some of those works. But we wanted to look at the void of space. When you look up into the night sky at night and you see the black between the stars, what do you think it is? Where does your mind go? Is it the reason that star-crossed lovers are pushed away from each other? Perhaps the reminder of how small we truly are for that small and yet could be light years. Or perhaps it leaves you wondering what is hidden within those dark depths. It's a fun idea to ruminate on, and it definitely brought some pretty awesome poems. And Mika is here with me tonight. And how are you doing, Mika?
I'm doing great. How are you, Victoria?
I am good. I'm glad it's Wednesday. Thursday.
It's hump day. Oh, yeah. It's no longer hump day. We're over the hump. Well, awesome choice of prompt. I think it's beautiful, and I can't wait to see what it inspired.
Absolutely. It's going to be a blast. And by chance, do we have anybody calling in just yet?
We do. We have a Faziana. Welcome, Faze.
Hey,
Faze. How are you?
I'm all right. Good to hear you guys.
Glad that you're
so
here.
Faze
has been awesome. I swear she's been like on every show lately. I haven't been getting to listen very much because the extended tech deadline is on Monday and I'm losing my mind. So I haven't gotten to be here as much. But Faze has been fantastic because every time I'm here, she's here, and I'm sure she's calling into other shows, and she's doing amazing. And she has her new co-host, Babbler. So for people that are looking for another fantastic show to listen to, watch Part Sinner, Part Saint, or listen to Part Sinner, Part Saint on after midnight Saturday. So Friday night, Saturday morning. She's an amazing host, has awesome prompts, and Babbler is such a fun person to be around. She is great comments, great insights. It's a dynamic duo, and I'm jealous. I mean, Mika's amazing, but I'm also jealous because I wanted Faze to also be mine. So.
Oh. Wow. Good save there, Victoria.
Today is the day that Mika learns that I have a love affair with Faze.
You've been cheating on me.
Faze is unwillingly being stalked by me, but it's fine. It's fine.
Oh my God. Out of all the people, I could not blame you for stalking Faze.
Right. She's pretty awesome. Like, she's sweet, but she's a badass. I adore her. I adore Faze. I love you too, Mika, but I just. It's always the quiet, nice ones.
Mika knows the truth.
Well, to start off the show after all these wonderful giggles, because who else do we need? We don't need anybody else besides Faze. We've got us three.
Yeah.
We're good enough.
One Faze is worth. Wait, what's the saying?
Go ahead.
Faze in the hand is worth two random callers in the bush. I don't know what it is. there's a saying. It pertains to Faziana.
That was perfect, Mika. That was perfect. So, you know, that was perfect. All right. I'm going to start us off with Karina May, Between the Stars. And Faze, would you mind reading this since you've joined us and I'd love listening to you read?
Sure. Between the Stars by Karina May. A celestial mystery of space we call nothing. Disgruntling definition, energy is still something. I continue to ponder endless possibilities. precognitive messages are psychic abilities. I gaze at the onyx field garnished with specks of gold, an abstruse cosmic void, respect the law threefold. Within the unmanifest, between Ira's bright daughters, potential is limitless and lacking in Earth's waters. Sat upon the crescent moon, behold the timeless ether, goddess and mother of stars muddled by what's beneath her. Divine interpretations, self-perceived reality, nothing is impossible, even immortality. Universal intellect states the space between the stars is interstellar medium, matter unfound to Mars. Galactic frequencies sing amethyst constellations, shoaling energetic mass, subliminal creations. Enceladus icicles penetrates the exosphere. Proxima Centauri seduces the atmosphere. Between the sun and the moon, charcoal emptiness subsists. Perennial essence transcendently coexist. Our questions remain restless and may be answered at death. When my bones become brittle and I draw my final breath, I'll stand among the empty, between the perpetual, satisfied with gained wisdom, humbly intellectual. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Faze, and a beautiful poem, Karina. You know, I think I might have been reading too much fantasy recently, but especially in the ending, this almost reminded me of like a chant that would be at like a school of magic or something like that, and extolling of the virtues of the potential in what is unknown, and especially in the ending, just this almost vow to look into what is still unknown and try to understand it deeper. Potential limitless and lacking in Earth's waters, lacking in all of the laws that kind of bind our normal reality to what it is. And what did you think of it, Victoria?
So I thought this was just fantastic. What is hidden in the void of space and the blackness that rests between the stars? Perhaps it is not. Perhaps gods and goddesses do not sit in our clouds and on our mountaintops, but perhaps that is where they reside. This idea that there is something more than what we can see, that the black might not be nothingness, but perhaps so many things crammed together that our mind cannot understand, the possibilities of things that we don't quite comprehend, and yet we get the opportunity to sit and think and understand that there is much that we do not know and we do not see, and with it comes the beautiful mystery of the universe. But if we stop and listen, if we ruminate upon it, perhaps Ira will speak to us. Perhaps we will understand that the stars are more than just burning balls of gas. Perhaps it is the twinkling eyes of gods and goddesses. That if we were just quiet enough, humbled ourselves enough, we might hear their galactic whispers. To me, it's such a fun intellectual poem. The rhyme scheme is disarming almost, because you think it's more like a fairy tale. And yet, to me, it's deeply intellectual. It really ruminated upon that black void. And it's done in a way that makes us all, at least me, want to go out, sit beneath the stars in quiet and gaze upon it, to hear perhaps something that I've not thought about, perhaps learn this mystery to immortality, perhaps rethink the way that I look at the world. It's beautiful, but thought-provoking. So really, really well done. I'm super excited.
A plus comment as always, Victoria. And what about you, Faze?
I thought it was beautiful. I really love the descriptions. I gaze at the onyx field garnished with specks of gold. Like the choice of onyx and garnished and like even gold just really makes it so gorgeous. And the word choice all throughout is very intelligent. Great vocabulary in there. There were a few words where I was like, I hope I'm saying this right. But it's beautiful images with definitely, like Victoria was saying, the intellectual side there. You can tell that this writer is someone who knows about space and science, and yet there's that mythological, magical nature, like Mika was saying, that really adds to it. It has that kind of wonder to it. It's a mix of the, I can't even think of the word, but like the playfulness of it, whimsy was what I was looking for. It's whimsical, and yet it's intelligent. It has both. I love that combination, and I really love the way that it describes things.
That was an excellent comment, too. Sorry, Faziana. I was on mute as I started. Great comments all around, you guys. And, Victoria, where are we going next?
Absolutely. It's great comments. And I had to pick on Faze a little bit because as you were reading it, I've come to realize that I subconsciously, it's got to be subconscious because it's not intentional, I subconsciously give you all the poems but the complicated words. I think I've done that to you like 2 weeks and now maybe 3 weeks in a row now.
I don't promise to say them right, but I'll make something up.
Amen. A for effort. That's all we ask here, right? Oh, all right. The next one up we have is Damn It Dave, The Space Between the Stars. And I will give this one a read. Most people love to view the stars at night, but I look at the space in between. Although it's true I marvel at starlight, I gaze and wonder, what are those spaces mean? Is all the blackness that I see a void, or is it there allowing space to grow? Was something there that sense has been destroyed, or is it just a stage of God's light show? I often wonder if it's just a veil that hides another universe beyond. As it exists in such a major scale, perhaps the spaces where new stars are spawned. It is probable that I will never know why God's left so much space to mystify. I like to think it gives them room to sow the seeds of brand new gardens in the sky. End poem.
Great read, Victoria. I like that Damon Dave has been entering more of our contests. He always takes kind of a unique perspective on the prompts, and I like that. And often I feel like he's got a lot of humor to his writes, but this one is more contemplative, so I like that he seems to be out of his comfort zone a little bit as well. I like this statement, too. Perhaps the space is where new stars are spawned. That's a really cool sentence. And what about you, Victoria? What did you think?
So this was a really, first and foremost, with a name like Damn It Dave, this was not the poem I was expecting. because it's really thought, he did put a lot, or they put a lot of thought into it, it seems. That idea of why is there space there? What was there? It actually reminded me when I was in, way back when I was in high school, I was at this camp. You know, typical Christian camp. I went for the summer for a week, maybe 2 weeks. I don't know. Kaleidoscope. And the first night I remember that we were kind of having this free time and I was outside. It's in the Puget Sound area in Washington. And, or at least it was way back when. And I was outside sitting on one of the picnic benches looking at the sky and I saw this bright flash in the void of space. I suspect it was probably a supernova, but it was really, really cool because it wasn't there, and then it was there, and then it wasn't there. And it looked almost like this wave coming out from a center, which is why I kind of assume that it's like a supernova or something. It was vibrant, vibrant green fading into blue. It was really pretty. This reminds me of that. I never would have looked at that spot before and thought there was anything of interest there or mystery there. And now I know there's a spot up in the sky where something happens, and though I can't pinpoint it, I think about it. I think about that night that I got to see that. And I like the idea. It too reminds me of the idea that we know scientifically that space is expanding. The idea is that eventually it will stop and it will shrink back into the little spot that became the Big Bang, is one of the theories is. And it made me wonder if perhaps space expands because God or the gods or whatever you believe has pre-planned the next star, the next planet, the next universe, and where it needs to go, but it's just not time yet. It needs a little bit more space. And so one star is plucked from the sky so that another can grow. I just really enjoyed the pondering of it. It was gentle and yet very thoughtful, this idea of providing room for more seeds to sow a new garden in the sky, the question of, you know, what do those spaces mean? I appreciated it and the thought that was put behind it and why that might have been done, intentional or unintentional. Why are those spaces there? So that new stars can form, or perhaps just a reminder of how small we are. It's just really, really well done. And I do believe space has stepped away for just a moment. So I am going to have us move on to our next poem. And that's going to be The Space Between Stars by Vicky Moore. And Mika, would you give us a read?
I would love to. By Vicky Moore. Starlight, star bright, just what are you doing? The space between you seems so large. What are you hiding from? Is the space between you empty or full of fears like the space kept between people? Imagine the stars with social anxiety, depression or hidden scars and pains, staying away from each other, just blackness between them, never meeting each other halfway. I never thought of stars as so frail or having such problems. I guess mental illness is universal. End poem. That was a cool poem. I like that there's this kind of humor to it of imagine the stars with social anxiety, because that's really a thought that, you know, I don't think it's crossed many people's minds. And I like that in a prompt about, you know, basically imagining what could the space between stars actually entail, they're relating it to this very human issue of social anxiety, that space that you hold between yourself and others. And what did you think, Victoria?
So I, too, really loved that line that you pointed out. Imagine the stars with social anxiety, depression, or hidden scars and pain, staying away from each other, just blackness between them. As someone who struggles with anxiety, not necessarily social anxiety, but also social anxiety, because I want people to like me and I'm afraid that they never will. And someone who has depression and someone who has scars from all the trauma in my past. And we all have trauma. It's just I dealt with it poorly as a child. I connect with it. Because you're right, we don't think of stars as feelings. We don't think that, oh, perhaps they have drifted away so that we might be able to get some distance from their neighbor. We just assume that that's how it is and how it's always been and how always will be. But perhaps mental illness really is universal. Perhaps the clouds rain because their burden has become too heavy and they need a moment of relief. Perhaps the meteor falls out of orbit, the asteroid falls out of orbit, from its ring because it is so tired of the monotony of circling day after day, year after year, always the same thing, always the same sights, and it just needs a moment of escape. And perhaps the stars remain so far away from each other because they need a moment of peace. It's a reminder to a degree that while mental illness could be universal, that it is not a lonesome journey, even when we feel alone, okay to take those moments as you need them. It is okay to take a moment and care for yourself internally, because we often talk about these cups and filling them and pouring out into others and how we can't take care of others when we don't take care of ourselves. But the fact of the matter is whether your cup is chipped and can't hold water, or your cup is just run dry, or perhaps your cup is completely full, it doesn't matter. It's still okay to say no. I need a moment. I'm not in a place to do that. And I think that's also a really helpful thought, because so often in life we tell ourselves what we should be doing, and yet here is nature doing what it needs without seeking or needing permission or a reason to be so. It had a little bit of humor, fantastic metaphor, beautiful thoughts, and just thought-provoking. Just really, really well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Victoria. I love how much depth you always plumb from every write. No matter how much I might miss it, I feel like after you comment, I have a deeper understanding of everything. And what did you think, Faith?
Nico?
Well, I agree with you about Victoria's comments. It's like it adds a layer to everything, and I really love what you said, Victoria, about, you know, it's okay to take that space. You know, sometimes we need that, and it's hard to accept that. I really enjoyed this write. I thought it was clever. It was interesting the way the stars were personified. You both pointed out the line that I loved, the stars with social anxiety, that they need to have that space between them. And when you think about it, stars are very, very far apart, so that's a lot of space they're giving themselves there in between. I thought the end was very clever with universal, because it's a play on words, you know, it's universal, and we all have it, but it's universal because it's the universe with the stars. I thought that was a really good word choice there to finish it off.
Absolutely. Great comment, Faziana. And Victoria, where are we going next?
Up next, we have Human-Shaped Disaster Between the Stars by Ted Pilot. And hold on, let me scroll through it. Okay, I don't think there's not any crazy words, so I'm going to have Faze read this one, because I can't keep subjecting her to that.
Okay. I don't mind the crazy words one, if you forgive me for tripping up on it. it's loading slowly, sorry.
No, you're good. It just means we get to hang out and just enjoy each other's company more, which is always great.
True. Okay, it's working now. Human-Shaped Disaster Between the Stars by Ted Pilot. At the interstellar crossroads, where the continuum is discontinued and synthetic pulses are disconnected, space quivers in the dusty death of a white dwarf star's afterbirth. There, magicians sit playing poker, shoveling lab-farmed crisps into their mouth while dissecting nouns pulled out of a bottomless electric hat. Blackouts shadow the last farm, held together with tofu dreg, where gold spray painted troughs filled with plastic pearls, feed the lost boys and girls on their last wooden peg legs. In the sway of that dark disarray, the Bay of Plenty sells out, offering discount on bluefin tuna and the broken body of Jesus Christ, While in the thick of the spending spree, bubonic fleas pounce from mice taxis, bending Eden to beg on knees. 2020. Clarity strikes with grandfather clock wisdom as bells chime a revelation, ringing the proclamation song, singing, we are the disease. End poem.
God damn, Ted Pilot, this is a really cool piece. Wow, I don't know where to start. I guess I will just go to the end, which was, you know, very striking to me. And the way that he talked about what we are doing to the earth, only after talking about the bubonic fleas pounce from mice taxis, bending Eden to beg on knees. And then I love that, I guess I should have expected this after the year that we've had, but 2020 being the year of the plague, and also saying, you know, basically 2020 hindsight. I really like that. You know, we are the disease is an incredible line to end on. There's a lot of very, very biting social commentary in this. And also, I think just a personal call to that within yourself that feels the weight of the guilt of what humans are doing and continue to do. And what did you think of it, Ephesiana?
I loved it. Like you said, there's a lot of social commentary in here. I feel like I might have to read it a few times to make sure I'm catching all of it. But I think that this is brilliant. I really love the way that he describes things. There's kind of like a surreal feel to things, but it's obviously grounded in real issues. I liked the bubonic fleas pouncing from mice taxis, calling them taxis. I like the way that he pointed out that, like, even the chips or crackers were lab farmed, that everything's just from the bottomless electric hat, everything's just technology, and yet we don't have, like, real anything. And the trousers are just gold spray painted. It's not real gold that we have. It's the illusion of gold. I thought the same thing with the 2020. I know that it's supposed to be about vision, but my immediate thought was it's talking about last year. And I think that it sort of is. We are the disease. It's an intense statement, and I really love this. It reminded me a lot of Rob Cohen's writing, and he's one of my favorite poets on L Poetry, so I was like, I have to follow Ted Pilot. I'm loving this.
Ooh, I like the comparison with Rob Cohen. I so agree with you, and that's high praise. Rob Cohen's poetry is amazing. I think he's one of my favorites as well. And what about you, Victoria? What did you think?
Well, I first have to chime in and say that I, too, love Rob Cohen, and this is stellar. I think what I'm sitting here is that I'm in awe of the depth of thought put into each stanza. At the interstellar crossroads where the continuum is discontinued, synthetic pulses are disconnected, space quivers in the dusty death of a white dwarf star's afterbirth. So a white dwarf star, fun fact, I don't know how much people know, so I assume I'm just going to tell you and hopefully share, imbue some thoughts or knowledge. Not that I think that I know everything. I definitely don't. I just have weird tidbits. Anyways, a white dwarf star is basically what they think the sun is going to become when it's exhausted the outer fuel, which is what we see on it. They expel their outer shell. They essentially become this white mass that just continues to expel heat. It's kind of the core. And the thought is that eventually a white dwarf will become a black dwarf, which is just this black mass that sits there and doesn't have anything. But we don't have any black dwarfs yet because the universe isn't old enough. So the thought that this is a birth, at the same time being an understanding that is also the end, is it speaks volumes here. The idea that synthetic pulses are disconnected reminds me of the pulses that they have heard deep in space occasionally and wondered if perhaps that is another alien race. And yet here, we have found where the world ends. At this interstellar crossroads, what we thought would always continue, it ends here. It is just a slow progression towards death. There magicians sit playing poker, shoveling lab-farmed crisps into their mouths while dissecting mounds pulling out of a bottomless electric hat. We have people who are supposed to be wise and mystical and magical and entertaining, and in the end, they are just a cheat. They are not magical devices that allow them to do what they do. They aren't even caring in their craft nor the food that they put into their body. Instead, they sit in this area that has blackout shadows that are held together with tofu dredge, poor construction, and the troughs are spray-painted gold because they want to appear to be more and better than they are. All the while, they are filled with facades, with plastic pearls to feed lost boys and girls on their last wooden peg legs. They offer those who feel hopeless, who feel lost, who feel beaten down, lies. It's easier to do that. What is that saying? It's about swine. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to Google it. There's a saying about feeding a swine. Anyways, it reminds me of that, vaguely. In the sway of that dark disarray, the Bay of Plenty sells out, offering discount on bluefin tuna and the broken body of Jesus Christ, while in the thick of the spending spree, bubonic fleas pounce for mice taxis, bending Eden to beg on knees. When all comes to an end, and even the plastic pearls are running out, we believe that we can sell anything. No longer are things priceless, no longer are things greater than retail value. This is the point in life where we look at things and say, if I had to sell you, what would I sell you for? So beaten down that even that value is too much and we offer it up at a discount. Running into stores in hopes of escaping a plague, all the while this is the exact ground on which it thrives. Bodies crammed together so that fleas might jump from mice as they scurry between your feet and infect you further, all because of fear. This is 2020. We look back on it now and we see where all the stupidity laid. The run on toilet paper? For what? I remember walking through the neighborhood and there was someone who had their garage door open and they literally had a wall of toilet paper. And this was in October of 2020. They didn't need it, but they had it because of fear. And how stupid must you feel to have so much toilet paper? Because you were afraid you wouldn't be able to get enough. So you deprived people of others, and now you have to sit there and look at your collection of ways to wipe your ass. Find a way to get rid of it. The people Ooh. That bought. The people that
That's
bought.
That's going to be a poem in itself.
But really, that's what 2020 was. It brought out the worst in people. Life ended as we knew it. And people did not become a beautiful supernova. They became a white star waiting to fade off of the heat and the energy that made them vibrant until they were a hunk of black coal floating in space. Worthless. It's an awesome poem. It's a stunning poem. So, yeah, that's my thought.
That was an amazing comment, Victoria. I so agree with your sentiment, but also collection of ways to wipe your ass is like my favorite line of this this year so far.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving me that.
FaZe has told me that I need to write down some of my comments. I'm going to have to listen to some shows and be like, Victoria's Greatest Lines.
It could be a bestseller.
Victoria's Greatest Hits. I'm in.
My clapbacks. No, I think this is, you know, you guys kind of mentioned it. Like, Rob Cohen does a fantastic job of giving you a piece of poetry that seems so benign on the surface, and yet as you get into it and you look at the detail and you really delve into the words, it has such a satirical, dark message. I mean, he doesn't always write that way, but a lot of his pieces, when he wants to write that way, he does it so beautifully. I mean, he does fantastic across the board. But he does that so beautifully. And this, to me, really does remind me of that. It reminds me of the first poem I read by Rob. And he was speaking about, it was a social satire. And it had lines like, you know, the buy two orphans, get one free. All the while people are thinking that the orphanage is closed because they just ran out of orphans. It's this idea that we always are thinking or making excuses for our naivety, and in the end we just look like assholes, because we human nature, as much as I want to say it is good and I believe that there are truly good, genuine people out there, human nature in 2020 definitely proves that there's still a lot of that. And I appreciate when people can call that out, that can call out society and basically say, do better, because you're nothing more than a white dwarf waiting to die. It was an awesome piece, really awesome piece.
And that was an awesome comment, Victoria. As always. And where are we going next?
Up next, we have Casey Day, and I'm going to have you read this one, Mika.
All right. Awesome. Called The Twinkle in Your Eye by Casey Day. Little fingers outstretched high. Look, Mom, I can reach the sky. That's the moon and those are stars. Wow, Mom, look, they have seen so far. But what are those spaces in between? That, my son, is where God hides dreams. It's where wishes fly and promises rest. Where dreams can hide, the angels know best. Where ideas are planted and love can grow, where tiny hearts wait for their homes. It's where tears find peace and joy goes to leap, where ambitions rise and burdens sleep. It's a special place, no planes, trains, or cars. That's what's hiding in the space between stars. Wow, can we go there, Mom? It seems like a thrill. If you're good, my dear, someday we will. End poem. And it's dedicated to her son, Archer. I forgot. Okay, I'm sorry. And FaZe, would you start us off with a comment on this one?
I thought this was beautiful. I love the conversational tone that it has, the questions, and that kind of like talking to a child in such a way that it's explaining it gently and yet, you know, letting their imagination grow. I think it's beautiful that she dedicated to her son. I like the line, where ideas are planted and love can grow. I think this is really beautiful. I love the name Archer.
Same, that is a really cool name. I agree with you, too. I like the lines that you called out, but also I like that there's this kind of continuing theme with a lot of these rites about the spaces between the stars, or really the spaces between anything, being the realm of possibility. And I like in this one that it's a mother talking to her son, kind of almost spinning a yarn the way that we talk about the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Like there's always something beyond if you just reach a little farther. What about you? What did you think, Victoria?
So it reminds me of my kids, which is great. But my youngest, every time we go out driving and she gets to see the night, which isn't, you know, often because night comes so late this time of year, but anytime she gets to see it, there's this moment of, the moon, you know, the two-year-old speech, the moon, you know, just this excitement of the moon. Look, mommy, the moon. There is something fascinating about it, to see the moon in the day, to see the moon shine in the night. And so I appreciate what Casey has done here. An idea of there is magic and mystery out in the sky. I like that there's the play with twinkle, twinkle, little star, and reminding us that it starts with a twinkle in our eye, with the thrill of what is up there. This land that we cannot reach, this land that we do not get to explore, this land that, this place, that we get to say what could be hiding up there, that dreams can hide, that ideas that are planted can grow. I mean, for crying out loud, Elon Musk had a dream of space, and he created a whole space company, and I don't think, and he started off making PayPal. Like, that's not space. But he had a dream, and he planted it, and it got to fly, and it got to soar. And the idea of shoot for the sky comes from the idea that there is no limit, that if you go past the sky, you go into space, and then you get to explore the universe. And what greater exploration is there than that? It's beautiful. It has the beautiful, innocent notes of a child. And at the same time, gives the idea of a parent speaking to their little one, saying, that could be yours. You can go up there. All you have to do is believe. And what better representation of the pure innocence of childhood and opportunity that each and every single one of them has, if only they are nurtured right. It was beautiful. It was touching and sweet and beautiful. And I feel like I need to read this going to bed, because it just seems perfect for a bedtime read.
Yeah, that's so true, Victoria. This would be perfect also to read to your child before you go to bed. And where are we going next?
Up next, Poetic Picasso actually just wrote us a piece. We always get those like 5-minute masterpieces, I swear. But we're actually going to hit up Poetic Picasso, and I'll take this read. Space is the seduction. I am the gentle sun illuminating your night, the sparkling star glowing in the cosmic canvas, the passionate heat burning our galaxy, a substance of engaging energy thus radiating. You are the nocturnal darkness of space, empty in the sorrow of my luminous absence. Without the constellation of a kaleidoscopic dance, two celestial orbs emerge in an exotic fusion. Our form is the beauty of the particles of electricity expanding with the solid, liquid, gas, and plasma, drifting beyond the distant apogee of the zenith where our moans spread into the Milky Way afresh. Come with me into the chasm of exploding matter, the bosom of the hot layers of our erotic exploration, as we roam the vastity of the universe together, creating the passages into our steamy black hole. Space is a seduction of my yearning lovemaking. Tu belleza es mi pasión, y tu noche es mi amor. No puedo vivir sin ti, ni besarte ahora, mi amor. End poem.
Great read, Victoria. And what a sensual poem. This could have fit on the earlier show as well. I really like the way that he weaves cosmic imagery into the sensual, and it speaks with such a reverential tone, and the cosmic imagery is just really, really pretty to read. And what did you think of it, Faith?
completely agree with you. That imagery of space is gorgeous, and it's very sensual. I've never thought of space as being so sexy before. this is an interesting twist. I really like the way that he built this up. It has the feelings of the heat of the stars, but it also, you know, plays on the darkness as an interesting thing too. I liked the kaleidoscope dance line. There's a lot of really great bits in here, and I think that it was really sensual and awesome, and I think that you're right. It could work for the earlier show on Wednesday as well.
Great comment. I like that kaleidoscope line as well. And what about you, Victoria? What did you think?
I think what really stuck with me is the exploration of it. I loved the line where he said, if I can find it, because now I'm all Twitter-pated. Okay. Where our moans spread unto the Milky Way afresh. The idea of speaking out your desire in such a way that it flows out into the universe creates that milky glow that we see, fascinates people with its beauty. I love the idea of exploration, the thought of creating the passages into steamy black holes, because of course we don't know what's in a black hole. It's kind of hard to study. And yet with the right lover, there can be that exploration. Those first times you are getting to explore them in a way that you did not know them. And so it's so fitting to me for two people to come together and to learn each other and to delve into them and say, you are this vastness that I do not know. Come, let me explore you and explore me too. It's beautiful. It's definitely seductive. It's wonderfully steamy. And yet it is a reminder of someone who calls to be loved just as much as they do, to pour in themselves, to pour themselves into a relationship or into a person so that they might grasp for a moment just how deep they go, just how complex they are. They are not so simple as to look into a night sky and see a bunch of stars. They are the sun and the galaxies and the constellations that dance, the way that twin stars orbit each other. They are so much more complex than a bunch of little white dots in the sky. It is an invitation, and it is beautiful and enticing and fantastic.
Beautiful, enticing, and fantastic. That's like the most glowing review, Victoria. That's
it
like
is
a review
poem.
I would want if I had written.
Well,
something.
We're glowing.
Comment. And where are we going
Thank
next?
You. Up next, we have The Space Between the Stars by Daniel Duhame. And I'm going to have to use this one.
Okay. There it is. The Space Between the Stars by Daniel Duhame. Cold, dark space between the stars, hidden from view, only noble eyes can see. The world beyond worlds, in a darkened haze of times past, locked in the infinite universe of space, where no one ventures into ever reappears again. What horrific evil lies in wait in the space beyond the stars, ready to pounce like an animal unleashed by great ambition to explore the void colored black, long before the stars were born by a cosmic intervention, but still governed by a mortal grasp. Just as a flower dies, nothing is immortal and faces oblivion without compensation for a life lived, a full cycle of existing. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Faye. And Victoria, what did you think? Victoria, are you still there?
Could you not hear me?
No, we couldn't hear you.
Hello? Okay. Oh,
now we can.
I might throw my phone out the window again. It might be gone after this night. It's may open. It's probably going to be gone after this night. I hate technology. What I like about this is that this really feels like a stream of thought. This rumination upon going out and looking at the stars, kind of gazing into the haze of it and wondering what's going to happen. You know, if you stare at something long enough, you tend to see, stare at a mountain long enough, you'll start to see shapes and faces and what have you. You look at clouds long enough, same thing. And so to me, this reminds me of someone who has gone out and stared at the stars for so long, perhaps hoping to find a new constellation or just see what happens to appear or reappear. Is it evil? Is it good? Is it going to be the reminder of the ambitions that we once lost or perhaps can find a new way of grasping them? Is there going to be, you know, looking at this earth, you can feel small when you look at the universe and understand how big it is. And so it can make you think of how small we are here on this planet. And, you know, how can we have governments that think themselves so mighty when in the great scheme of things, they are so small? How can we make a difference when we are just basically a grain of sand within this great, vast space, cycle of existing? Or is there actual purpose when we are one planet among millions, billions, zillions, who knows how many? And if each of those, if even only one, have life, then do our odds of importance decrease by half, by more? It's a call to remind us that we are small, and yet, his author's notes, just random thoughts. It's an existential thought, is striking. Because it thinks not only what is the distance, what is there hidden in that dark void, but a reminder of our place in this world, that we are not so mighty as to make a difference when it comes to all of time and space. It's really quite an interesting piece.
That was a glorious comment, Victoria. It's hard with you as a co-host because, like, I feel like I need to step up my comments, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you're just challenging me in the good way. But also, oh my God, you just plumb so much from each piece. Okay. Faviana, I'm going to pick on you. How about you go after Victoria? What do you think?
I mean, that's really hard to follow because she wrote like an essay about it.
Technically, I just spoke an essay about it, guys.
Don't you think her English teachers hated her?
Okay, so I am going to digress. I made the horrible, horrible mistake in college. I don't know if it was a horrible mistake, but I ended up switching universities 3 years into my degree. I went from a music major to a business major. The school I was at was not accredited in business at the time, and so I ended up switching, maybe also to be close to the boyfriend who turned into the ex-husband. But anyways, I switched, and because I was technically going into my senior year, I was allowed to have extra leniences, even though I essentially restarted my collegiate career going from music to business because, you know, accounting and classical violin have so much in common. Surprising, I know. And so I got to be in this one apartment opened up, and I got to go and take the room. It turns out that the person who was supposed to be there was actually like really, really tight friends with the other two girls. I don't know why she wasn't able to go to school that year, but she wasn't able to go to school that year. And they definitely did not like me. Like, they did everything they could to make my life miserable. And about, 3 months into the school year, it ended up being like so toxic that I ended up moving into the dorms, which sucked, being in my fourth year and living in a dorm. Anyways, it was great fun because she was the teaching aide to my English teacher. So I had to contest pretty much every single essay grade that I got because I went from A's to like low B's and C's after that. And I was just like, this is such crap. Anyways, so yes, I was hated by a teaching aide English teacher. That's kind of the story. That was it.
Oh my God, the audacity of someone to give you a B on an essay. What the fuck? I'm going to be for you. Right? Victoria, a B on an essay?
They should know who they were fucking with. No,
they will burn for this.
See,
that is just
why I need
two
people
evil
in my life.
All right, Faze, what were you going to say about this piece?
I don't remember. it was interesting. You know, it's a different take on it than some of the ones we've gotten so far, because a lot of them were looking at like the beauty between the stars, and this one is anticipating that it might be, you know, evil lying in wait between. It has that element of kind of fear, and it's like ominous of we don't know what's out there, and maybe it's better that we don't know. It was interesting because it was all like one breath. Like, I felt when I was reading this, there's no real like punctuation. Like the line breaks don't actually feel like breaks. So it was like one mouthful of information that just gets there. And it's interesting because it works. You know, not everything could be that chunk of writing and still feel like a poem, but it does. So that takes some work.
Ooh, I like what you're saying there, Athesiana. Especially, it reminds me of the kind of the trite saying of, you know, you there wouldn't be shadows if it wasn't for the light. And what you're saying right now about the kind of the possibilities that have been explored so far in the space between the stars have all been positive potentials. But here we see that the stars are almost defined in this poem by that mortal grasp, by that negative space that surrounds them. I really like that concept as well. I like how you talked about it, and I like the idea of it a lot. I like the way that this is worded here, ready to pounce like an animal unleashed by great ambition to explore the void colored black long before the stars were born by cosmic intervention. So I like that the void is older than the stars, older than anything. The void always exists. It reminded me of the way that some of my favorite authors talk about death, that death was always waiting for creation. Death was you know, waiting for its subjects, basically. I don't know, it's kind of a dark take on the prompt, but it's such a refreshing one as well. And Victoria, where are we going next?
So we have regrettably finished the poem written for the stars. So Frank got us all riled up. I figured we'd go and look at some erotic plants.
Ooh.
Last week, we got to read about Ithil Colquhoun. I think that's how you pronounce it. I think that's how Pam corrected me. But anyways, she uses a pitcher plant, which can be both feminine and masculine bits And she tends to get femininity and masculinity in her landscapes, nature, paintings, pictures, what have you. And so, you know, looking at the picture plan, it can be much like a woman's flower, or it could be the man's vegetables. So we are going to finish off a few poems from that. And this one is Blue Harris, Oh Love, Have You Ever Tasted? And I will take this read. Have you ever tasted a burning throat? One red agony gulping deep that thrill of gloves that would clutch tight wings and drink belly full of fear, flushing violet to iris skies. So thirsty, I turn back the sheets, knowing soon you will settle heat and flutter of cinnabar focus, collapse into my arms, white as crocus reach, and beg with dilated need for a finish. One that unsheathes a halo to warm in rush, that body that will never really knew flight. Still, I rise to hold you tight, my hematic stead in drone hover. Oh, love, now you will swallow down the heavens and seat yourself amid my hungering. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Victoria. Yeah, but you know what's cool is I'm really glad Blue Harrison wrote for this because I've read a lot of poems from her and they always have a certain sting to them. But it's cool to see her write something singing and sensual. But it, I don't know, it just has such an undercurrent of ominous foreboding. Collapse into my arms, white as crocus reach, and beg with dilated need for a finish. I like that because there's just, I don't know, there's something almost crepuscular in the white as crocus reach and beg with dilated need for finish. You almost get the image of like someone reaching from the grave. I almost feel like you know, the plant is predatory, right? Am I wrong?
Yes, it is. It is,
yes,
a carnivorous plant.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the imagery is very, very evocative of a sort of a predatory type of relationship, the kind that just sucks you dry without you ever realizing that you're giving and giving and giving and actually running out of resources to give. But I like that it's written from the perspective of the one that feeds. It's very, very, it's like a disturbing sort of sensuality that we're given in this. Very, very well done. She's such a talented writer. And what did you think, Faze?
I thought it was interesting. I've been watching a lot of old Criminal Minds episodes, so I also saw it as kind of like a dark, like predatory kind of sensualness. But I was like, is this just because I just watched a bunch of like scary things? I think that it was really interesting in the way that she did it. I love some of the images that she chooses. Like using the crocus is smart, with this as a plant, kind of inspiration. Cinnabar, I looked up to make sure I knew what I was talking about, is a rock. It's toxic mercury sulfide. So that I think goes with the whole thing of it being like a predatory sensuality, because I mean, like the cinnabar is a deadly but beautiful crystal. So that's a really interesting choice to include. This is clever. It definitely has some intelligence in there, and yet it's both beautiful and unsettling, which takes skill.
It absolutely does. Great comment, Faze. And what about you? What did you think, Victoria?
So I love what all you guys have said. I love what both of you have said. she does a fantastic way of weaving in these images that are actually quite problematic. Cinnabar is toxic. So is an autumn's crocus, which has those leaves that reach up. They can be white or white turning to purple. And every part of an autumn crocus is poisonous. They have alkaloid toxins in them. And so I appreciate in this that there is that idea of a predatory lover, a person that is going to feast upon every bit of the one that they are with. And it is not because they are wishing to satisfy the person they are with. It is because they are sating their need and their hunger. And so in the end, this lover who might be sitting there breathless and excited and thinking, oh, this was the greatest, comes and that they are not special, which just think about a drop from that. Having one of the best nights of your life and then being told you can get out. That's all I needed you for. I just needed to sate my hunger. They're lured in. They are used for what this plant or this person wants. And when they are done with them, they are discarded, be it the way digestion works or be it kicking them out of the environment that they're in. It is a fantastic metaphor for someone who perhaps love bombs, someone who's a player, possibly someone who knows how to give what they want people in and leaves them wanting, leaves them lost, leaves them knowing that they're used. It's actually quite funny. I just had this random thought because I was driving into work today at godforsaken hours of the day on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I get to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and do a 13-14 hour day because it makes the rest of my week light. And I listen to this radio show that has what they call the second date update. And today this guy called in, he met a girl. She recommended that there's apparently this trend where you like hire a photographer and you get your first date getting a bunch of pictures done. And this girl goes and does this. They shared their first kiss. It was great. She was supposed to split half the bill and she never called him back. So he calls into the radio show and they end up calling her. The person that they're calling does not know that the original date person is on the line. They just call and say, hey, we were reached out by one of our listeners and whatnot. Turns out that this girl had seen this trend. She's the one who made the suggestion to go and have these pictures done. She sent the photographer link to the guy because the photographer was her ex. And she was intentionally doing it to make her ex jealous. And the reason that she never called this other guy back, no, the reason she didn't call the boyfriend, the caller back, is because she got back together with her ex because of the photo shoot. And it turns out the ex-turned-boyfriend actually charged the poor guy almost $1,000. And naturally, the guy who had called in was frustrated, was angry. And one of the hosts goes, so, you know, speaking to the girl, so what did you learn from this? And she goes, well, I'm really glad I didn't call him back because the way he just blew up right there is definitely a red flag. And it was just like, no, sweetie, that's not what you should have learned from this, because there was, it really wasn't a first date. It was a manipulation tactic. And this poem, having listened to that this morning, reminds me of that. It is someone who has manipulated someone into their grasp to get what they want and then discards them. And it leaves the other person not understanding. It leaves them confused. It leaves them wanting. But it is not this person's problem because they got what they needed. So anyways, it's as you both said, it's very predatory. It's very intellectually woven together when it comes to those predatory items, the poisonous things that leach in when you are not expecting it and devour you. It was really, really well done. It was an honorable mention in last week's contest very much so deserving. So that, yeah. Anyway, that's my thoughts. Okay, I'm done.
Great thoughts. A plus on that essay. All right. Where are we going next?
This is no longer Strange Magic After Midnight. This is now Mika hosting Victoria.
Victoria's essay grading with Mika.
Yes. So, up next, we have one by the ever-amazing Pam Ray, and I'm going to send this one over to Faze to read, if you'd be so kind.
I don't see it yet, but once I do, of course. There we go. A Deep Decay of Quelled Thirst by Pam Ray. Ceremonial observances of dropping foliage, digging the dirt in a digital age. A cold demeanor spills into a deep decay of moist succulents. Plump stems arousing adobe inhibition as stomach linings don a glutton's playbook. A pink and yellow sunset resting beneath the benefactor tree, quelling the logman's thirst. Fanged vegetation spread across labial credentials, sworn loyalty to a last meal. We bank the railway on the end of a track, spread to karmic records kept, blending the film of moth wings into grains of pulped fiction. Phantoms of Roman gladiators slide swords into open slits of Mother Earth. She counts the coin, built the spill of seed between Jezebel and the hungry dogs, devouring civilian flesh. Mocked notches, parading robes in empty streets, the audience blinked a day too late. End poem.
God damn, Pam. This is a fucking incredible write, and that was a great read, Faze. And, Victoria, I'm going to make you start on this one.
I'll try not to do an essay. I just love this poem. It's definitely got those ideas of a almost sexual connotation. There are organs and orifices that are here not because they are something to be beautiful, but because they are something to be used to make ends meet. They are there because someone has a hard on and they need to get off. And so the idea of love and passion and futures are lost all because it is a mere call of nature. It is a thirst, a glutton's playbook that is just seeking its self-satiation. That's a made-up word, but you get what I mean. I think what is particularly striking is this idea, and there's a couple of them, phantoms of Roman gladiators sliding swords in open slits of Mother Earth kind of reminds me of the boys that would like pretend that their dick was a sword and would battle with it. Like, I'm sure you guys heard teenage boys in high school talking about that.
Yeah.
My brother definitely talked about that with like Boy Scouts. And I was like, oh, you guys are so stupid. I dated military, and they have this joke about making, a Black Hawk, which is where two soldiers stand by each other and make it swing in opposite directions. Fun stories. But they do. They think it's some kind of toy. And you see that play, that idea that it's something to play with. It's not an opportunity to connect with people. It is the opportunity to have a prostitute, have Jezebel, a prostitute, take a few coins and let them get off. And whatever she doesn't keep, the dogs will clean up. It's jarring. It's striking. And the entire time we say we do all of this for other people's pleasure, perhaps even an idea of pornography here, which mocks the idea of what love and passion and lust can be, all because we seek entertainment and not true fulfillment. We want something quickly and easily devoured to sate the need that we have, and not something that would actually be more fulfilling and satisfying in the long run. We seek the sweet treat that eventually is going to kill us rather than a luscious meal that takes time to prepare. It's just a stunning write by Pam. Really stunning.
It absolutely was. You also called out some of my favorite lines, and I love the take that you got on it. I think that's what's really cool about Pam's piece is that she doesn't spell it out for you necessarily, and she leaves a lot to that kind of personal interpretation, but she speaks to some universal experience that we have with the way that human nature, the way that human nature is. I feel like this sparks a familiarity, even if I didn't necessarily think, oh, those guys who do sword fighting, the sword fighting with their dicks, I still got the same sort of kind of, I would say, what's the kind of nostalgia where you're not very nostalgic for it?
Oh gosh, I know this
brought,
one.
You know what I'm talking about. It brought like unpleasant sort of recognition from me of that same exact sort of attitude, even if that wasn't the exact reference I was going for. And I really like that she's able to do that. And her word choice is just impeccable. I was going to say that phantoms of Roman gladiators slide swords into open slits of Mother Earth. And I think there's something so uselessly predatory about it, as if there's nothing to be gained from doing it, and but the harm that it causes is still there. So that's what reminded me of high school boys also. And what did you think, Faith?
Well, I love what both of you have said. I liked the stanza, fanged vegetation spread across labial credentials, sworn loyalty to a last meal, because, like, fanged vegetation is not something that a lot of people think of. Like, the fact that it's a predatory plant is interesting, that she points out, like, the female anatomy-related bits of the plant make sense with the picture, but also she labels it as credentials. It's like proving its femininity, this plant in something that it's doing. It's part of its predatory nature is it's like advertising its sexuality, sort of. And then having sworn loyalty to a last meal, it's like not only is the last meal something for the one eating it, but it's like there's this like specialness of the, I don't know, it's interesting because like the rest of the poem, like you guys were saying, is more like it's just playing with it, it's not taking it seriously, but to have loyalty to this last meal, I don't know, there's something, I haven't quite processed it yet, I'm starting to fall asleep, so I can't do it justice, but I thought that was really cool. I do have to go, you guys. I'm falling asleep. But awesome show. I love you both.
Oh, love you too. I'm
we
so glad
you
were here. Thanks so much for your awesome comments.
Yes. Thank you for being here, Faith. Sleep well. Now I'm sad. That was such an awesome comment by Faith.
Good way to go out, though.
But at least
she went out. She went out on a great note.
Yes, she did. But I do at least have my amazing Mika to hang out with me, so I can't complain. Because Mika
I
is
am
the best.
Here. What are you? Oh, no, yeah. No. You are the best, my friend. You are the best.
And at least we know that we have my massive, oh, God.
Vocabulary?
I just forgot the word. No, I was going to say my massive comments. The essay, my massive essay comments to fill up the time.
I love your essay. The person that gave us a B is definitely going to hell for sure.
She was such a jerk. Like she was legitimately like someone who definitely thought she was more important than she was. Oh God, I just don't like people like that. Jerks. So up next,
like
we do have a We'll hunt her down together. Deal? Deal.
Road trip. Agreed. Can we do it like Kill Bill style? Can I wear a yellow jumpsuit?
You know, if you didn't, I would judge you. But I gotta wear hot pink.
Yes. Can we drive a pussy wagon?
Fuck yeah. All right. Up next, we have a piece that was submitted last week, but we didn't get a chance to read it, by I Am a Poet and I Know It. And it's called Random Thoughts in All You Can Say. I can surely tell you this. I was, if truth be told, not up to painting anything at all in those brushes of colorful paint today, because I just happened to love the nakedness of an unpainted canvas on the spotless wall in every artistic way, just as the highest skyscrapers of my youth loved as the everything but dull sky, even without blushing, as I guess blushing is a rather personal matter. Only the affectionate person sins, for all what does matter is he or she does gather. But what is it, in fact, that it seems to bring? And why forget what should not be forgotten? Well, perhaps I remember it as a matter of fact, one faithful day. But now I have to leave. Now I really have to run away, as I cannot stay to forever stay, because the vile call me in all their ingrained disfigurement, as I do throw the too heavy, picked-up cobblestones at the dawn day, as I see it de facto mirrored then as a pursuing thought that just informed me that it started raining again on my smashed umbrella, as I do have to pronounce it, as I do say, oh no, I don't want this. As I prefer to be a man who does drown in the driest drought on this day, although that's just an airborne statement, as I guess you can even call it something like a random thought, suddenly born when you refuse to forever pray, to be eventually and nevertheless caught in those heavens below or even the ones above, as it's there in all what you can say. So yes, please, all you memories, go away. End poem.
That was a great read, Victoria. Especially with the style, like, I'm a Poet and I Know It. You've got a lot of almost prosaic ways of writing poetry. And so there's a lot of meaning packed into every line. And, you know, I think it takes a lot of practice reading to do them justice. So great job. I like that he kind of has this, a stream of consciousness feel to a lot of his writes, that I really appreciate, though, because it takes us from one concept to another, but it's not that any one concept is necessarily disjointed. We're following along as if it is our own thoughts, slowly cascading. I guess I would just say I really enjoy his style and like having it read. And what do you think, Victoria?
So I agree. There is a lot that's packed in here. And he definitely has those writing styles, but you have to take a moment and really break it down, because it is that fluid thought, that stream of thought that just kind of goes from one to the next. And if you're not paying attention, then you might get lost in it. The part that I think really kind of sticks out to me is that there's this idea of, in the second stanza, and why forget what should not be forgotten? How many times have we forgotten things that we shouldn't have, that we regret forgetting? We try and remember that moment from years ago, but we haven't paid attention to it, and so we forget, because we are drawn to the streets. We are drawn in directions that do not always serve us, and so it is much like the cobblestones that we see loose on the road. We pick one up and we think, oh, what fun it might be to throw this, to listen to it clickety-clack down the road, not really caring if you create a pothole. All the while, in this act of momentary thought, of personal fulfillment, if you will, we end up crushing our umbrella, and we only recognize the folly of our ways until we need it. And so we are stuck in the rain, drowning, regretting that we decided to pick up a cobblestone that we needn't really pick at, all because we wanted. And so it's much like picking a scab, if you will. You know, those memories that we know don't do us any good, those what ifs that are never going to be answered. And yet there we go, picking at the memories, saying, what if, what if, what if? It is those cobblestones that we pick up and crush our own heart with terrain. So he banishes them. So please, all your memories go away. It's clever and it's really well done. And it sometimes is hard to track, but at the same time, when you take a moment to really appreciate it, and appreciate how we got to where we got to, it really does have quite some insight into it. So it's an interesting piece.
Excellent comment, Victoria, as always.
Thank you.
A plus plus.
And
no
next,
red ink on this essay.
No B's for me. Yes. Up next, we have Fairy Five. With a poem that is, Who Is That? Would you mind reading that one for us?
Absolutely. Okay. Who Is That by Team 35. They are giving those fake smiles to each other. I will have none of that. Introductions are made. I slide off into a corner and take out my notebook. People should know better than to hound me about this crap. I am comfortable now writing my third poem. Are you writing? I do not look up. This usually gets rid of them. This one gets closer to my face. I jump, startled, glare at him. He laughs. What is wrong with you, I ask. Go away. I thought you were here to party, he tells me. He knows better. He knows I hate people. I stick out my tongue at him and give him the bird. This should give his coworkers something to think about. Who is that, someone asks him. I do not hear him say, that's my wife, and I don't care either. He knows I hate socializing. End poem. Victoria, what did you think?
So, I'm going to send you as a comedian, and he's an introvert and he's married to an extrovert, and the whole thing is it's just hilarious. Because so often we tend to marry our opposites. We tend to marry our parents, and we marry the things that harm us so that we might feel better. And so to some extent, I look at this and I think, how many times was Pink Fairy 5 forced into a position where she had to socialize rather than get that moment to recharge how she needs to? Because here she has married someone who holds her into places. That can be good when done in a healthy way. It can open up new opportunities, new avenues to have friends be made and have a social life if you have to rebuild your life, what have you. But at the same time, it's also extremely frustrating when the person who is supposed to know you decides to poke you in a situation that you're already not comfortable in. Much like rubbing salt in the wound, it gives you this idea of someone who doesn't really care if she's comfortable. He's there to get a reaction so that he can giggle with his friend. Sure, it can be loving and it can be playful, but it's really not concerned about her, what she needs and her health. And so it's playful, it's fun, but at the same time, it's kind of one of those things of like, you think he'd know by now, maybe perhaps a little frustration. Really interesting, right? Not something I've read from Pink Fairy 5 before, but really, really well done.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I like what you're taking from that as well, because I love that there's kind of a twist for me in that I didn't think that it was someone that she knew. And it was reminding me of all the times when you're on the train or on the bus or wherever and reading and someone's like, what are you reading? Or you're doing whatever. Maybe you're just listening to music with your headphones and someone wants to interrupt you and go, what are you listening to? Like, and that really pisses me off. So I like that there was this kind of twist where I thought, oh my God, it's one of those annoying people at the party that can't just leave well enough alone. But it ended up not being that. It ended up being, someone that she knew, and she can just playfully flick him the bird. But I don't know. It had that sense in it because he's still being fucking annoying. Pink Fairy 5 has always such a beautiful touch of humor to these kinds of rights, and it's just well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. Like, there are definitely some relationships where they thrive on that. They thrive on picking on each other. It actually, because I'm weird and I digress a lot and I come with anecdotal stories. Growing up, so my mom's side has a bunch of like Henry Hermans, Herman Henrys, Francis Henry, Henry Francis. Like, it's just a bunch of like the same names over and over again. And you understand very quickly that I do not get any creativity from my mother's side. love them as I do. They are not creative people. But my grandpa, my brother's name is Jeremy, and my grandpa growing up always called him Herman because it's a family name, and Jeremy is just, no one in my family is named Jeremy except for my brother. And I remember my brother as a child hated it because he was always like, my name is Jeremy. And this kind of reminds me of that. You can have those relationships where if they don't pick on you, then you know, or you know that you're loved because they pick on you. There's kind of that playfulness, which can be a really, really good relationship. And so you're right. I do see that as well. There's also relationships where it's like, not justifying my comment, but there's also those relationships that it's just kind of like, you are an asshole. Like my ex-husband, for example, he did not care if I was uncomfortable. He did not, oddly enough, he was the introvert because I'm an extrovert. I'm an awkward extrovert. But he didn't care if I was comfortable, if I was having fun.
Oh, are you still there, Victoria? Victoria? Oh, no, your phone is doing it again. Don't throw it. Don't strangle it. Oh, okay. Well, that was a really cool comment, Victoria. A really cool comment. As always, with your comments. And now I will go ahead and read another poem. Okay, so I'm going to post up a poem by Jim Bellamy. I think this is going to be a great poem. Jim Bellamy always has a very unique style. And I'll give this a read. It's called, what now for peacocks or peahens that stain seas of soft feathery sea fluff? What now for kine or kids? But a tree of torn, soldiering, ethereal cars. And when once machines end, then storms will shake God's lilting, loving ghost car and dying angels glint like red Mars. Oh, idolizing graves, grass, spurted road caves, cracked glass, and empty, haunted human farms close down. And scent of human fingers penetrate God's ghost town. A lady in lace hangs shoes and sound stamp sex the guilty element of death. We will ride into a rose. We shall ride inside a shroud sail, and moon men will slice glass, red loads veiled phantom-pierced vagina, and a web of horrid tears will lend me clothed memory, and ideas will tear a sea of crows. Oh, are there serpents in my head? Oh, will Jesus rise the sex dead? As I am laid by death, then when will sad summer deck blurred veils? This is my mind. And poem. Welcome back, Victoria.
I made it back.
You did. I was reading a very, very intense poem. I caught it right about the middle.
Sorry, you're on speakerphone now, so I gotta try and not talk over you. That's my fault. I caught you mid-read in it because my phone hates me and technology hates me. And I'm just going to, like, steal the first comment if you're okay with that.
Oh, please do.
I think what really kind of sits with me on this, or what really kind of makes me think about it, is that there's this idea that of searching. Dying angels glint like red Mars, idolizing graves, grasp grass, spurted road caves, clasp glass, and empty haunted human farms close down. There's this idea of seeking to me. So many of us get tired, you know, the five-year, 7-year itch, whatever it is. We're in a relationship and we get tired of the same old. We're always doing the same thing. It's the same person, the same arguments, the same sex, the same. And so often we will look over at the grass on the other side and perhaps it will look greener. Never mind that it looks greener because it is being fed by corpses, by people who have buried perhaps their lovers or who hide something beneath the surface that we don't really want to know about. Instead, we tend to jump over there in glee. We have these ideas that, you know, perhaps over here, even if it is the dead, because the grass is greener, the, you know, a phantom vagina might be better. We don't worry about the serpent that seeks in the grass, because this serpent is seeking in the grass, wishing to raise itself from the dead because it did not water where it was. It chose to fantasize about summer flings and fantasize about the woman next door, forgetting that there is no perfect person. Each one of us has flaws, and in our own ways, we are going to have to cultivate our gardens. He says my poetry is quite psychedelic, and I feel that in this, because I don't think that it outright anywhere says that we tend to pine after that which we cannot have. But at the same time, it screams so loudly to me about someone who is in a relationship that they are unhappy with. And instead of putting in the hard work to try and fix it, they choose to go elsewhere, restarting this cycle of burying their past in hopes of doing better. And as we should, perhaps they learn from it. Perhaps their snake venom has changed just enough that they can lure someone in and strike a little deeper, strike a little harder, become a little bit more enticing. All the while, the only reason that they continue to flourish is because they keep having bodies to bury in their grave, in their garden. Just, it was an interesting, very interesting write.
That was a great comment, Victoria. It's so hard for me to comment on a poem like this right away. And you just, like, pull one out of nowhere. It's fantastic.
It's the essays.
It's the essays. Now, I was going to say that I love that there's this sort of strange conflation of sexuality and the image of God in this, and that both are tinged with fear and with loathing. I forgot my train of thought. Where was I?
Tinged with fear and loathing.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, there's this huge undercurrent of sexual imagery that goes throughout. And it's related and conflated with religion throughout as well. Scented human fingers penetrate God's ghost town is one. And then, oh, will Jesus rise the sex dead? So it reminded me, and I could be completely off base with this because it's hard for me to know exactly what his intent was, but it reminded me of what it's like to be repressed in your sexuality by religion, and the sort of rebellion, fear, loathing, self-loathing that you have as you come into puberty, as you come into like a knowledge of your own person as a sexual being, when it's also tinged with the fear of sinfulness and the fear of the punishment that comes from that. So what I got from it was really kind of that bubbling cauldron of self-loathing and excitement and fear that comes from coming out of that kind of upbringing.
I got stuck
on
you.
That's all I
had,
Victoria.
I'm
not
awesome.
An essay person.
No, that was an awesome comment, though, because I think it is valid, because there are sexualities that are villainized by religion. Christianity is very vocal about that. There's a lot of sects of Christianity that...
They discriminate, but it's only on a spectrum of what is worse.
Exactly. And I mean, I have a cousin. She is traditional Catholic, so traditional that it's a wild story for another time, but she was secluded up in a mountain. She was raised that women are not supposed to work. They are there just to have babies. She met her husband when she was 16 and he was 48. They have pretty much a baby every year because it's, you know, you don't have protected sex. You don't do anything. It's God's will. And she has condemned. I have two cousins that I have a cousin whose name's Amanda, and she's married to a woman named Amanda. So they are the Amandas. And she condemned them to hell. She's not been a part of the family until probably a couple of, you know, about two decades ago. But she then cut ties with the family really like a decade ago. Anyways, she cut ties with the family because we were too sinful to be around, because even though my mother's side is Catholic, they were not Catholic enough. My grandma had her rites read in English, and my cousin condemned my grandma to hell on her deathbed, all because the rites weren't read in Latin, as if God really cares what language we speak. But you're right. There is that condemnation, the idea that somehow you can sin against God and nature, and that, you know, one sin is worse than the other, ignoring the fact that the Bible says the wages of sin is death, and that no one should throw a stone unless they have not sinned. And yet so often Christians sit there and pretend that we are perfect, and we are not. We are far from it. That's why we say we need a savior. But yet, when it comes to who wants to love who, somehow we're magically better. Your comment is so valid because I see it. So I appreciate your comment.
Thank you,
Long
Victoria.
Story to say, I appreciate
also,
your
sorry.
Comment.
Oh, thank you, Victoria. And also, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that you were Christian. And I hope I don't offend you ever, because I
you
do
did
have
not
a
offend
certain
me.
Bitterness.
You did.
Okay, but I...
No, you did not offend me
know,
at all.
Even
I do
if
not.
It's not that comment. I do have a certain bitterness that lurks in my deepest recesses of my heart towards religion, especially Christianity, because I have the most knowledge of it.
Yeah.
And so I just hope that never comes across as disrespectful to you.
It does not. So I'm not a person who believes that you have your battle with me. And if I ever do anything, I hope to God you tell me, because I would rather know how I've offended people and do better than blindly think that I'm perfect, because I'm not. So I do not take
Thank
it personally.
You, Victoria.
It is not my battle to have with you. I love you as you are, no matter what you believe, because you are greater than your faith. So that's just my two cents.
Oh,
all right. We've got 10 minutes left, and we've got four poems to read. So I'm going to put up another poem, and I'll take this one, if that's okay.
Okay. Oh, please do.
Awesome. Okay, this is Freshen Up by Grant G. Let's take a moment here, a pause, a minute to think. No, not alone,
but as one searching the darkness. Come, grab my hand, let's fly past every radar. No blocks, nothing barred, transparency alive. Don't be afraid, let's look beyond our misguided eyes. History has spoken. How many years has man been alive? And our intelligence has not long began crossing wires. For centuries, we had no technology. Now we have helicopters reaching Mars. I need pause and sigh. Burn me alive. I have sinned. I don't believe the lie. Teachers, policemen, politicians, religious fanatics scream, I will die. Hey ho, listen, bro. I'm still alive. End poem.
That was a great read, Victoria. Also, this is cool from Grant. I've read a lot of poems from Grant, but I think this is one that really speaks to me of, I could be wrong, but I feel like psychedelic experience, especially when he's talking about looking beyond our misguided eyes. Not alone, but as one searching the darkness. That feeling of oneness is one that's really cool and one that's really hard to attain when you're wrapped up into your own little world and your own life. And so there's a sense of kind of leaving the ego behind and understanding experience not as an individual, but as a whole, as humanity itself or as life itself. That's what I would go from. And just, I really like this perspective of oneness. And it does speak to me of psychedelic experience.
I think that was such an awesome comment. And I agree. It really does kind of have that psychedelic experience that's woven in there. I think what I really appreciated about it is that it reminds us how small we are. I know this is written just based on the author's note, this is written for probably the Star Wars contest that Pam put on for May 5th. And I'll be honest, I'm not a Star Wars fan. So if I miss things, it's expected. Star Trek, I'm your girl, not Star Wars. But what I appreciate is that to me, there was a reminder that our history is very, very small. Doesn't matter what you believe. Whether you believe that man was created 2,000 years ago or things were formed billions of years ago, truthfully, we are a blip in the time that things have been going on. And our history shows that it has taken us so long to get where we are. But so often, history repeats itself. So often, we have these ideals that we stick to, slavery, what is right, what is wrong, what God believes, what he thinks and feels. We have these ideas where we think that, kind of like what we were just talking about, if you don't fit into my parameters, if you don't do what I say, if you don't believe what I believe, if you don't vote the way that I vote, then something's wrong with you and you need to change and, you know, you're gonna go to hell, be it politically, religiously, with policemen. Because, you know, if you don't do what they say, sometimes people die. they do die. But I love that testament at the end. Hey, bro, listen, I'm still alive. Despite everything that you said, I'm still alive. Despite the fact that mankind is really just starting to blossom into technology, I'm still here. I'm still alive. And what you think might not be right. The way that I live might not be wrong. We have centuries of changing morals and values and religions, and yet I'm here. So I loved it as a testament almost of going against the grain, which to what I understand is kind of like what Star Wars is all about. So that's what I'm going with, and that's what I'm sticking with.
I really like that. I didn't realize there was a Star Wars show. That's pretty badass.
Great comment,
Victoria.
The only reason I know about it is because I have a friend I had grown up with And they're really crazy Star Wars fanatics. And so it was always like, may the force be with you. And it's just like, oh, good Lord, Star Wars with the force.
You're like, okay.
So.
Exactly. All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time left. Should we close it down or what do you want to do?
The last three I'm looking at, I see one we might be able to get in, but I just don't feel like we do it justice. So I'm going to say that these last three can be held over for another show, but I do want to thank all the poets who write in, who allow us to share their work, be it if it's on the show you expected or the one that you did not expect. We always do really appreciate people writing in because it is what gets these shows going. It is the fuel to our fire, and we hope that our words, you know, not to speak for you, but I think you feel the way I do, we hope that our words truly express how much we appreciate it. We truly believe that, you know, Late Night Poets believes that every poem has something of value in it. We are all in a learning process. And so whether you are writing for 18 years or 5 years, whether you think your poem is the greatest piece or you don't quite think it has value to us. And so I just really want to express that I appreciate each person that writes in, each person that shares their work, and each person that calls in. Whether you're great at commenting or you write essays like myself, or you just say that was a really good poem, you know, it's what keeps our shows going. And we love the participation. I love the participation. And each and every person is valued, especially my co-host, Mika, who is fantastic and kind and loving and sweet, and you people don't even know how lucky I am to have her. So that's what I have to say.
Oh, I believe it's
Mika,
the opposite
Mika?
Way around, my friend. I believe that's the opposite way around. The shows would be
you
nothing
would be
without
wrong.
You. Thank you so much for all the work you do. No. You do so much. I really appreciate it. And also your comments are just beautiful. I think, you know, people who tune in the shows, at least a solid majority of them have to tune in just because they hope that you'll come on their piece. You have beautiful, beautiful, lustrous comments, Victoria. Love your insights.
Go ahead. I'm talking about you. Go ahead.
Let me compliment you, God damn it. Jeez.
Okay, fine. I just am not good about it.
Seriously, thank you, Victoria. And I echo your sentiments towards everyone that wrote for the show and especially towards you, Feziana, for coming on to read and lend your insights as well.
Absolutely. We love you all. Mika, I adore you. And I guess for now, until next week, have a good one.
Good night. See you soon.
Good night. Sweet dreams.